Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the Hot Hits Wrestling Podcast. I'm Hitzer.
I'm Hadi.
On this episode, we will pay tribute to the late, great pro wrestling, MMA, political pioneer, Antonio Inoki, who recently passed away at the age of 79. Mm-hmm. Plus, we'll also review the recently concluded WWE Extreme Rules 2022, mm-hmm. which was headlined by the return of Bray Wyatt and several fun hardcore stipulations in many of the matches.
Yep.
Plus, we'll also be discussing All Elite Wrestling's Battle of the Belts 4 alongside another backstage fight in AEW, this time between two of their famous Latino stars, Sammy Guevara and Andrade. Additionally, I'll be delivering a solo review of Impact's amazing Bound for Glory pay-per-view yesterday, New Japan Pro Wrestling's Royal Quest 2 as well, which featured, wouldn't you know it, another Match of the Year contender from FDR, alongside, finally, Stardom's recently concluded five-star Grand Prix Finals. But let's kick it off by talking about Antonio Inoki, man. Mm-hmm. This was a figure that didn't just change the pro wrestling world. I think he was a figure that changed the world of combat sports in general.
Yeah.
He was a Japanese wrestling legend. He passed at the age of 79, as I mentioned, from complications related to a rare disease called amyloidosis. Yep. I'm not actually sure what that is, but it sounds like it sucks, man. But
yeah, it does.
You know, much like his, I guess, singular chin, the life that Inoki led has no analog amongst wrestlers in the United States or anywhere else in the world. He was not only among the world's greatest box office draws for several decades, he was also the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling. That promotion changed the way that the sport is staged and remains Japan's, to this day, most popular promotion. Arguably the number two or three pro wrestling promotion in the entire world. He was also a mixed martial arts pioneer.
He was.
Before MMA was ever called MMA.
No such thing yet.
He lured Muhammad Ali into the squared circle for a special rules match that ended in a controversial draw.
Hilarious.
He also, you know, created his own karate style based on strong style wrestling technique. Mm-hmm. He is a personality so recognizable that he sometimes turned up randomly as a character in various Japanese manga and anime. He was a shrewd politician who spent more than a decade in Japanese politics, a public servant who used wrestling to advance diplomatic causes in countries like Iraq and most famously North Korea. We'll talk about collision in Korea in a little bit. All of this, it could be argued, was in the service of his very singular goal in his mind. It was fueled by his burning fighting spirit ideology to demonstrate that pro wrestling was the strongest sport in the universe. That's a, you know, a little brief obituary that I just gave to Inoki
there.
But what about you, Hadi? What are your memories of Inoki and what do you think his legacy is?
I mean, his legacy is definitely, he would be, okay, if like Ricky Dozen was the grandfather of Japanese pro wrestling, right?
Yep.
Then he would be the father of Japanese pro wrestling, lah.
Definitely.
You know, so Inoki was just this enigmatic figure in the whole wrestling industry, not just Japan but the entire world. Even in North America.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
I mean, come on. You have to have a certain amount of stardom to get the great Muhammad Ali into a ring for an exhibition match, right?
Yep.
I mean, yeah, the match itself was a whole kerfuffle on its own, lah. You know, you can have a whole documentary just talking on that match itself.
Absolutely.
But that was how popular Inoki was, lah. The greatest wrestler, lah. He's the one, I mean, one of the famous matches he had also was like, remember when the great Antonio didn't want to sell for him?
Oh, he beat his ass, man. He beat his ass.
He's like, okay, fine. You don't want to sell? I'll freaking do strong style times 1,000 on your face.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing, lah. Like, so, you know, there was this kind of honor that comes with wrestling Inoki, I feel.
Yes.
And Inoki definitely is one of those game changers, as big as how Vince McMahon might have changed the wrestling landscape in North America, Inoki changed the landscape of Japanese pro wrestling. That kind of thing. Just less toxic.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Also, you know, he kind of like brought pro wrestling into North Korea. Which is, it remains to this day, the highest attended pro wrestling event in the history of the world. And I don't think that attendance will ever be eclipsed.
First of all, you cannot force people to come. You see, that people are forced to come for that one.
It was 500,000 people watching 2 days of live pro wrestling. Obviously, it was mandatory under the threat of death. Yeah. So, you know, no other country can probably do this again. unless they bring wrestling back to North Korea. Who knows?
That's a long shot, but I don't mind actually.
Crown Jewel, like 18 or something, you know, in North Korea.
That'd be insane.
Yeah, man. Inoki was such a pivotal figure in Japanese pro wrestling. Obviously, one of the prodigies, as you mentioned, of Riki Dozen. The other prodigy went on to found All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes.
So Riki Dozen really was the grandfather of Puro Resu, shall we say. And Inoki was the father of what we now know as strong style Japanese wrestling. What do you remember any of his matches? Like, do you have like a favorite memory of a fight or a match that he had? I know you mentioned Great Antonio, you know. Is there anything else besides that?
Honestly, I mean, to be fair, Inoki's time was way before I was born, right?
It was a couple of generations before we were.
A lot of it is retrospective. I mean, all of it is retrospective, apart from the stuff when he came in for the Hall of Fame induction, that kind of thing,
He was the first WWF Japanese champion.
Yes, correct.
Yep. Yeah. Japanese world champion. It was an unofficial thing. There was a big controversy around this, but I'm glad they finally set the record straight. In fact, Michael Cole said it on Raw, like they finally recognized him as the first Japanese WWF world champion.
Yeah, which is important,
It's very important, of course.
I mean, you know, honestly, it's a lot of the stuff that I watch on YouTube, you know, him against the great Antonio Luis Diaz, you know. Where it's just like some of it is still black and white, you know.
Lufes founded the Lutes Press.
Exactly.
So this is how old the shit was, you know.
I think that was, what's his name? The one guy who inducted him to the Hall of Fame. Stan Hansen.
Yep.
Yeah. He's
who invented the Lariat.
Exactly. I'm just saying he was, you know, involved in the rest, basically the pioneers of wrestling.
He was one of the pioneers,
you know, and he was, you know, he even wrestled the pioneers of Indian Indian wrestling. He went on to fight in Pakistan or so, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot of this crazy. What a life lived, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody can come close, I mean, or anybody who comes close, you know, is just mimicking what he has already done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, there's no other figure in wrestling that is as colorful, I guess, as the great Inoki.
Sure. A lot of people like yourself have already mentioned Inoki's greatest matches from the 60s, 70s, and stuff, like a bit before my time, obviously, our time, obviously. But one match that I did catch of his that was during my time, during my era, was Antonio Inoki versus a guy who at that time was not known as Vader yet.
Oh, Mastodon.
So, this Mastodon, he was between his WCW and WWF stints.
Okay.
And Antonio Inoki battled Vader in the Tokyo Dome.
Oh, shit.
For NJPW during his final countdown tour. Inoki is actually the one who created the Vader character.
Oh. And
this was the moment that made him a star in his first match in the Sumo Hall, because Vader squashed Inoki.
Oh.
Like, Inoki was like this legend, right? He made Vader by laying down for him. He got squashed. It led to a riot in the Sumo Hall. Obviously, this was an older Inoki. But he still had that aura, you know, and everything. Like, he really, really made Vader, you know, in that particular match. It was iconic, so we have him to thank for Big Van Vader as well, one of the greatest big men of all time.
Yeah, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, Yeah. So yeah, he did a lot for pro wrestling all the way up to the end.
And it was, if I'm not wrong, Vader was the first gaijin, right? To hold the
title. I don't know about the first. I'm not sure about the first, yeah, because I'm pretty sure Hulk Hogan has wrestled in Japan before.
He predated Hulk Hogan, if I'm not wrong.
Okay. Yeah, perhaps you're right. Perhaps you're right.
Yeah. He was the first gaijin wrestler to hold the title.
In NJPW. Oh, yes. Yeah, yes, you're right. To hold the title. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because there were a couple that predates him to have wrestled. Yeah, but to hold the title, yeah, for sure. Obviously, you know, Brock Lesnar, after that and all that, you know, Jay White, etc.
Yeah.
The whole legacy and influence that Inoki has had on the world of pro wrestling cannot be understated. The entire strong style that we watch NJPW, you know, that we love NJPW for was his. The idea of slapping your opponents, open palm strikes, you know, to fire you up. There would be no Blackpool Combat Club, you know, without Inoki and things like that. All those like MMA based pro wrestlers, like, you know, your Ken Shamrock,
Don Fry.
Yeah, Don Fry. Even to this day, you know, guys like Bobby Fish and Matt Riddle and things like that. Yeah. You know, a lot of it is taken from Inoki's gimmick and persona and ideology. So yeah, rest in peace to Anthony Inoki and condolences to his friends, family, and fans.
Yeah, man.
Any last words about Inoki before we move on?
No, one of the greatest of all time.
Absolutely. GOAT of Japanese wrestling.
100%.
GOAT of pro wrestling in general. Mm-hmm. If you had to make a Mount Rushmore of influential pro wrestling figures,
yes, you
cannot ignore him. Like, maybe you want to put Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage and the others, but Inoki has to be there for sure.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the biggest pay-per-view of the weekend, I would say. Although not the best, that would belong to Impact Bound for Glory. Sure. But
I didn't watch that though.
I'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah. But let's begin with WWE Extreme Rules 2022. What do you think about the pay-per-view overall, Hadi?
Honestly, not bad.
I thought it was like a B-.
Yeah, not bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't the greatest. It wasn't even the best pay-per-view of the year for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because of Bray Wyatt coming back at the end, kind of got me all hyped up for it, lah.
Yeah.
It finished really well.
Most definitely.
However, the pay per view, there were a bit of a few kerfuffles that were just meh, you know.
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
Things like I for some reason I didn't enjoy the Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins match as much as I wanted to.
Yeah. And I'll discuss why a little bit later when we get to that portion. But let's begin with the match of the night.
Let's go.
A good old-fashioned Donnybrook six-man tag team match.
Okay.
Imperium Giovanni Vinci, Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser versus the Brawling Brutes, Butch, Rich Holland, and Sheamus. And you know what? Before I even talk about this match, I'm not even bothered by the names Gunther and Butch anymore. They've been ingrained in me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I accept Gunther and I accept Butch.
Got over it already.
I've gotten over it already. And in hindsight, these are okay names.
Yeah, okay.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And in any case, you know, to quote Sheamus, this feud between Imperium and Brawling Brutes, whether it's tag teams, whether it's six-man tag teams, whether it's a hardcore match, whether it's Sheamus versus Gunther slapping the hell out of each other, which we saw on SmackDown again in the sequel to their probably match of the year just last week. You know, to quote Sheamus, this feud has been banger after banger after banger after banger after banger. Mm-hmm. And Triple H could reliably rely upon these people to kick off the pay-per-view hot.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Triple H and everyone else, I think the consensus is the pay-per-view kind of went downhill after this match. A lot of it is not down to like the lack of talent from the rest of the staff. Like, a lot of it is booking.
Yeah.
But a lot of it also is that Imperium and Brawling Brutes have such insane chemistry with each other. And this good old-fashioned Donnybrook match delivered beyond my expectations. I thought all six of them looked amazing in here. Even Rich Holland, who I don't have high opinion of, looked amazing here.
Yep.
Sheamus and Gunther, every time they come face to face, I get chills down my spine. You know, this is the type of big man, big meaty man slapping meat that I exactly. love. Vinci and Kaiser have come a long way since their Jobber days in NXT and have become, you know, established main roster stars. So has Pete Dunne, so has Rich Holland. Yeah. What do you think about this good old-fashioned Donnybrook six-man tag match?
First of all, I mean, okay, the gimmick, whatever, right? It actually makes, it kind of works, you know, with the whole European pub kind of setup that they had over.
Yeah, this is actually the second Donnybrook match they had. Exactly. The first one was Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, so, you know, whatever, it works, especially when you put these six guys together. I like that they kind of paired up with, like, you know, at the beginning when I think Gunther was on Sheamus, Butch was on Giovanni, and Rich was on Ludwig.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just that visual right before as they just quickly attack each other, brilliantly done. And, oh my god, it was so much chaos, right?
Yep.
Like, in a good way, lah.
Control chaos,
And it was so beautifully, I mean, such a physical match that, you know, you can't help but just cheer.
And also, I think, like, very well booked and well choreographed and well cinematographed, because I think, despite it being so chaotic, we didn't miss anything. The camera crew and production was on point.
Yes. I mean, they caught, like, that awesome, like, drop kick, that bullshit on Kaiser.
Butch's moonsault on top of the whiskey barrel was amazing also.
Christ, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, kudos to Butch, man. Pete Dunne, formerly known as Pete Dunne.
I mean... Yeah, I think Pete Dunne is quite new to the main roster people, but we are very familiar with Pete Dunne. We know he is this good.
We know, yeah, exactly. And so awesome that he gets to showcase this kind of, like, you know, feats. I think, and I didn't mind that the Brawling Brutes won. It was fine. It was a great match for what it was.
Because Gunther keeps beating Sheamus. Sheamus needed a win. And it comes in this form, in a faction versus faction.
Yeah, and, you know, it kind of makes sense that the Brutes won. You know, just the... It's like their territory, you know, that the Imperium were coming into.
Mm. The UK pop, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think wonderfully booked, wonderfully entertaining. Great way to open the pay-per-view. I was just sad that my energy kind of got sapped as time went by.
Yeah, a little bit. One little wrinkle that I think we failed to mention early on also was... Gunther, you know, he exudes this, his mantra is that the mat is sacred, right? You know, I don't like being in his hardcore matches. I will never use a weapon. This is below me. Well, this is below pro wrestling. I hate how pro wrestling is being presented these days, etc. Great character for him. But when push comes to shove and he's desperate, he resorts to using weapons too. So I love that hypocrisy for the heel, which is a very nice touch as well.
Agreed, yeah.
Let's move on though to let's talk about these two matches together.
Mm-hmm.
Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey in an Extreme Rules match, and Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross in a strap match. I think both of them kind of failed to deliver and fell a bit flat. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know why it was, but it just didn't live up to the expectation. I mean, Extreme Rules, motherfucker.
Yeah, I feel like Liv and Ronda don't have a chemistry.
Yeah.
I think individually they are very magnetic performers, but this match and all the previous matches they've had together haven't quite delivered in the way that I want to. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's just like, you know, two performers don't have the right mix to make for a great match. Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross. I understood why Kross needed to win to extend the feud, but I've said this since his NXT days. Oh, no. Kross is a very boring wrestler. And his character is a bit boring too. I think Drew McIntyre needs to move on from this feud.
Yeah, yes.
Kross is one of the people who came back that I kind of didn't agree with. I thought he should have gone elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I've never enjoyed a Karrion Kross match. Him versus Keith Lee, etc. were all kind of boring.
Yeah, plus it was a small finish.
Essentially. So do you agree that the next two matches kind of fell flat? And why do you think that is?
I just think the booking is odd. Just the way that I mean I like Liv Morgan. I know how much has improved over the years.
Correct, yeah.
But I feel an Extreme Rules match is not the kind of match for her. Like, it just falls short of something. Like, she doesn't have that kind of ferocity that can honestly take over these kind of matches, you know?
Yeah. And they were doing this weird character thing with her. Like, every time she got hit or got punished, she seemed to be breaking a little bit mentally. Like, she's enjoying the punishment. And I don't think that kind of character fits with Liv Morgan. And
Alexis
I don't think she
Bliss,
can pull it off.
You know, Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, Alexa Bliss. Yeah.
So, I'm not sure what's up. But, yeah, like, just weird gimmick for this wrestler, I guess.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. So both matches were subpar in my. Yeah, really took a bit of wind out of me after the first match. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I always complain about strap matches, right?
Same. Yeah.
Like even when Cody Rhodes was doing strap matches, I was like, "Why are you doing this? Strap matches are so boring.
Yeah.
They were boring in the '50s, and they're boring in 2022."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, you need to really like do something innovative if you want to make a strap match work.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's only so many things you can do. You know what I mean? And we've seen it all.
Agreed. Yeah. Agree. Yeah. Let's move on to the WWE Raw Women's Tag Team Title Match, the first ever women's ladder match. Mm-hmm. One-on-one ladder match, that is, on the main roster for a world title. Bianca Belair takes on long-running rival Bayley of Damage Control. I thought this match was quite solid. It kind of like breathed new life into the pay-per-view after the lackluster past couple of matches. Mm-hmm. I thought there were some cool spots in here. They did nothing too crazy. It wasn't TLC type of craziness or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think both women accounted very, very well. Mm-hmm. Bianca Belair's double KOD on the rest of Damage Control when they interfered was really impressive. Yeah. Bayley is such a ring general that she can carry a match with Bianca. Bayley has been in ladder matches before. Bianca has not.
Yeah.
When I say ladder matches, I mean in NXT.
Yeah, yeah.
But Bianca has not. I thought this was not overly spectacular, but quite solid and did a lot to revive my interest in the film.
This was like a 3.5 out of 5.
Correct, yeah.
I like the story behind it. I like the interference in it. The action was solid all around. I love the KOD, man.
The double KOD of Io Sky and Dakota Kai?
That was so good. The final one she did also was awesome.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Good on her to secure the win. Just legitimizes her title reign, lah. Yeah, this is the opposite. So, like, Bianca has been going strength to strength during her championship run, while I feel that Liv going the opposite direction.
I think Liv hasn't been presented as a strong champion, whereas Bianca, beating Becky, beating Bayley, she's beaten two of the four horsewomen, so she's kind of like the honorary fifth horsewoman at this moment. Great booking for Bianca, and Bayley loses nothing by losing this match, to be honest.
Yep.
Bayley is made.
Agreed.
Let's move on to the I Quit match between Edge and Finn Balor of the Judgment Day. I thought this was half a good match.
Yeah.
The first half of this very long match, what is it with Edge? Ever since he came back, he started having this 30, 40 minute epics, and a lot of his matches didn't need it. Wow. His match versus Randy Orton from 3 years ago at WrestleMania.
Still going on.
It's still going on right now, today. So I'm amazed that he managed to make it to the Finn Balor match.
The time and space continuum, it's still going on.
Absolutely, Like, that final scene in the Loki series finale,
that
flat circle in the sky that Kang did. That was the Edge and Randy Orton match.
It's still going on. Oh my god. You've been nonstop for years, right?
But thanks to Sylvie, I think that match has finally been broken. So Edge can wrestle Finn Balor now.
Yeah.
In yet another time-breaking continuum match.
Yeah.
But at least half of this was fun. The first half was quite boring.
Yeah.
And then the second half, when all the overbooking and shenanigans happened,
exactly.
It sort of livened up the match a bit.
Yes.
I think the finish with them holding Beth Phoenix hostage, and that's the reason why Edge quit, is a bit played out, because nearly every I Quit match seems to end in the WWE with the face not refusing to quit until a loved one is being held hostage.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been done before.
Yep.
But I guess I didn't mind it because it was a better alternative than what came in the first half of the match.
Yeah.
And I saw no way for it to finish other than this. Yeah. I don't know. What about you? What do you think about Edge versus Finn Balor and all the overbooking and the shenanigans and all of that?
Some cool spots. Balor's entrance, as usual, Balor is damn good at entrances.
His remix of his original entrance is quite cool, actually.
That's cool. How do you say? Yeah, you know what? This is actually still a relatively solid match. Like, a 3 out of 5 instead of 3.5.
You know what I mean? I think the first half was like a 1 out of 5, and the second half was a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, so like,
and
kind of
it averaged
out
to 3 out of 5.
So, at the end, I still enjoyed it. So, okay lah. but really could cut the first 20 minutes, like the first 10 minutes away.
15 maybe.
Yeah, even. You know what I mean? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think because like Edge hasn't wrestled for like, you know, 9 years, right? And he comes back and he's like, I'm going to make up for lost time.
Yeah, yeah. And he just goes for like 40-minute matches, but then we don't need it.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, also, you are backstage. Edge is such a legend, and Edge is probably saying, like, you know, I want an epic for this pay-per-view. He says it every pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, the writers and production people are like, okay, we can't say no to Edge, right?
Since you're a Hall of Famer, might as well.
Mm. The thing is, I have seen Finn Balor have epic long matches. Really, really good. Like his Kyle O'Reilly NXT TakeOver match, for example.
Oh, that was good.
It was phenomenal, but this was not it. I think part of it is because Edge is just really old and he can't
go
quite keep up with it anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anyways, but it was solid. Don't get me wrong. It was solid. Let's move on to the quote-unquote main event of the night. Ooh. The debut of Matt Riddle's fight bit on the main roster featuring special referee Daniel Cormier. Mm-hmm. Former UFC heavyweight champion, former UFC light heavyweight champion, former Strikeforce heavyweight champion and Strikeforce Grand Prix winner, mm-hmm. MMA legend, wrestling legend, Daniel Cormier, and most famously, a huge WWE fan and Seth Rollins' mark. Mm-hmm. The video of him marking out live in person in the cheap seats when Seth Rollins cashed in the money in a bank on Brock Lesnar is still very, very memorable to me. Mm-hmm. I love that in the build-up to this match, Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins both had separate beefs with Daniel Cormier, so Daniel Cormier wasn't biased in one way or the other. He wasn't going to support his MMA brethren just because of that. Because Matt Riddle kept pointing out that he beat John Jones twice in high school in wrestling, mm-hmm. and Daniel Cormier is 0-2 against John Jones, while Matt Riddle is 2-0 against John Jones. Seth Rollins being like, you know, such a dick also, and etc. Yes. And the feud between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle, in my opinion, the best built feud of 2022. Yeah. With their split interview and everything.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. And plus with the debut of the fight pit and everything. Everything, and Daniel Cormier and all of that, everything sort of culminated to what I thought would have been a really, really great match of the year, a 6-star match or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think part of the reason this match didn't
live up,
reach those heights, is because of a couple of things.
Sure.
Number one, I think the design of the fight pit in that particular arena led to a lot of fans not knowing what was happening.
Yeah,
they couldn't see through, which is why in the middle of the match, people were kind of, they seemed disinterested, like the crowd wasn't interested in it. Other than, you know, some of the big spots that they could see clearly, like the Broton off the top of the cage onto Seth Rollins in the middle. That was an amazing spot that kind of brought the crowd back into the match. Secondly, everybody was expecting Bray Wyatt because of all the QR code teasers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And after this point, Bray Wyatt hadn't appeared. So they were getting restless. Like, is Bray Wyatt going to come? Is Bray Wyatt going to come? So there were chants of we want Wyatt in the middle of this hot feud match, which didn't help, you know. So there's a couple of reasons why it wasn't a 5-star, but rather a 3.5-star match.
Agreed.
So it wasn't a bad match at all. Yeah. In fact, it was a good match that just was, I think, programmed a bit wrong.
It's misbooked a bit, lah.
Yeah, a little bit misbooked not in terms of the match itself, but in terms of production and how the crowd can see the match.
Exactly.
And also in terms of timing, they should have debuted Bray Wyatt before this match.
Agreed.
What do you think about Seth versus Matt? Did you like the finish? Did you like Matt Riddle winning and everything?
I'm fine with Matt Riddle winning. I mean, he showed you why he should have won. Those were really great. That was an entertaining match regardless.
Agreed,
it's just, goddamn, the design was so weird. Like, even for me, it was like, at times, even I was having troubles understanding what the fuck was happening, you know?
Right.
Until when the camera is in the ring, then I got no problems.
Mm.
But when the camera is always outside, like, you know, at times, right, then that was a bit of an issue also.
And you can imagine the people who are there in person, even worse. Yeah.
Yeah, so you'll be like, what the fuck's that? Like, this is a wall.
And no wonder that nobody could see Seth Rollins step. Like, there was no reaction.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of these kind of things, you require the crowd to understand what is happening. And when the crowd doesn't understand, it takes away a lot. You know, especially, you know, now that we have seen, you know, pandemic matches and all that, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so overall, the quality of the match was awesome, lah. But just production issues and all that here and there. And also Bray Wyatt coming at the end, took away a lot of the steam, lah.
You know? Absolutely. And, as someone who has seen every Triple H takeover,
yep.
He has this one trope that I semi hate and semi love is that, you know, at the end of every takeover, the logo will come up.
Yeah.
And then after the logo comes up, just before it cuts to black, he has I guess what we would now call a post credit scene.
Yeah.
When the pay per view is about to end, I think we famously remember Tommaso Ciampa coming back to powerbomb, yes. Johnny Gargano yes. through a table and stuff like yes. that. And he did the post credit scene for the Wyatt return here also. Yep. I like the little Michael Cole, you know, saying like, "Oh, are we still on the air?" You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, just a bit of authenticity, you know.
Yeah, it was new. It was new for the main roster, but I'm very familiar with this because he does it every takeover. Exactly. So I kind of get it. And by the way, speaking of Michael Cole, right?
Uh-huh.
Michael Cole fucking was the MVP of this pay-per-view.
Yeah, he is.
Again, the way that he sold the emotion of Finn versus Edge, you know, and Dominic Mysterio and everything. Yeah. Like, he sold me the emotion that I wasn't getting from Dominic Mysterio.
Yes, thank you.
He was so emotive. I've said this, like, when Triple H was taking over, Michael Cole is going to be the guy. He's going to be the most important, best improved player in the WWE main roster. Mm-hmm. And it's proven to be true.
It is. Yeah, it has.
Anyway, hot damn. The White Rabbit QR code teasers has led to the return of Bray Wyatt, like I said. No, no, no. Like everyone expected it to be honest. And it should have. Thankfully, it's what we were given. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the presentation here? His return, the abandoned Firefly Funhouse, of a reference to him, you know, giving up that gimmick and maybe moving on to something new. The little teasers of all the previous characters that he's played or has been affiliated with, mm-hmm. the Buzzard, the, you know, stuff like that. What do you think about this whole creepy horror house Halloween type presentation, which is very Wyatt, like, to be honest. He brought back the Black Lantern, yep. which I love. Yep. He got a thunderous ovation. Yep. He unmasked to reveal himself right at the end. I thought this was quite well done.
Yeah, perfect. Not too long, not too short. Just enough time to get the crowd hype. And then boom, now we want to watch Raw and SmackDown.
Absolutely. I also like that Wyatt didn't attack anyone. So there's still a level of mystery there. Like, who is he going to feud with? Why is he back?
Yes. Yep. 100%. Yep. Because like, don't overdo the thing, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, and that was perfectly done. So again, kudos to WWE again, going strength to strength. I mean, yeah, some booking errors here and there, but nothing too egregious. Mm-hmm. This quality of WWE is shocking me every week, you know. Mm-hmm. Another pay-per-view done and dusted under the Triple H era. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to more, I mean, better quality stuff as the time goes by, lah.
Agreed. Okay. So Extreme Rules ended with Bray Wyatt. It kind of saved a bit of a lackluster pay-per-view. I think it elevated it from a C to a B.
Yeah, sure.
In my opinion.
Yeah, same. Agreed.
As well as the Imperium versus Brawling Brutes match. If you have not seen it, go out of your way to watch that match. Probably match of the night.
Yeah, that was a 5 out of 5 for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pretty solid pay-per-view overall. We have some complaints, but I'm still hopeful for this Triple H era. I think it's not
the kind of complaints that cannot be fixed, you know, or require really big like shifts.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you recall last year's or the past 4 or 5 years of Extreme Rules, right? There's only been one Extreme Rules match on the pay-per-view called Extreme Rules.
Yeah.
And at least this pay-per-view, every match was an Extreme Rules stipulation.
Yeah.
Ladder match, Donnybrook submission, everything was extreme, right? So this pay-per-view earned its name. And also, if you remember, do you remember what happened last year at Extreme Rules?
What happened last year?
When Finn Balor was about to deliver the coup de grace and then he fell off the ropes and then the ring collapsed for some reason, nobody knows why.
Yeah,
he got dropped out to the ring ropes, Finn Balor, who's still recovering from that also. So I mean those were the type of complaints that we had last year.
Like, what the fuck was that about?
Right. And this type of complaint seems so like trivial by comparison.
Exactly. So that's why when I complained about this pay-per-view, I always try to remember, well, last year was a very different situation.
Yeah, we had the ring collapse for no reason. For Finn Balor, because Finn Balor stood on the ropes, this 190-pound guy.
Small, tiny guy.
Yeah, he collapsed the ring ropes and then he lost because I don't understand. To be honest, I mean, Finn Balor should receive a rematch also with Roman Reigns because, you know, he was never pinned in that match.
True.
Anyways, okay. Let's move on to AEW now. Before we talk about Battle of the Belts 4, let's talk about the latest in AEW backstage drama.
Yeah, what's up?
That was created when Andrade told the story of Sammy Guevara on a Spanish podcast, Spanish language podcast, complaining. He said that a lot of people in AEW backstage was very cool, but he had one issue with one guy, Sammy Guevara. I love that at first he said, I'm not going to name names. And then like 30 seconds later, he said, I'm going to name names. It's Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara is a pussy because he complains that he gets hit too hard by me. And that he said that, like, you know, oh, Andrade hits too hard. He's been complaining about that backstage, blah, blah, blah. After that interview was made the rounds on the internet, Sammy fired back by cursing out Andrade on Twitter, calling him a jobber, telling him to fuck off back to WWE, like everyone knows that he wants to. Andrade responded by saying that he'd see Sammy face to face on Wednesday at AEW Dynamite tapings. This led wrestling fans to kind of wonder if a situation that appeared to be a shoot on a podcast was being actually turned into a work, you know, because, you know, Andrade saying on Twitter, I'll see you on Dynamite, kind of implies that it was a work and like leading to a match. It turns out not. Then the night of AEW Dynamite, before the television broadcast began, AEW president Tony Khan officially cancelled Andrade's Career versus Mask match that was scheduled for Rampage on Friday. Yeah. TMZ later broke the story that Andrade was sent home after a backstage altercation with Sammy Guevara. TMZ's account of the situation made it sound like Sammy instigated the backstage fight. However, the fact that Andrade was sent home while Sammy remained at the taping and even scored the pinfall victory in the main event against Daniel Garcia and Bryan Danielson made it clear there was another side of the story coming. Sure. Unfortunately, as of Wednesday night, nobody knew what the other side of the story was. Because Sammy Guevara had that altercation just a few weeks ago with Eddie Kingston, you know, where it led to another backstage fight, right? Yeah. Eddie Kingston tried to beat him up after an insensitive promo, fat-shaming him and everything.
Yeah,
they've seen better the hatchet and everything. Yeah. So when we hear of another Sammy Guevara fight against another wrestler, I think the fans in general sort of blame Sammy again. Oh, Sammy is the cancer. You know, he's the asshole. You know, every single time it's Sammy causing problems, etc., 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 you know. And that led to a really poor atmosphere in the main event of Dynamite, you know, the Jericho Appreciation Society versus Daniel Garcia and Bryan Danielson, where people were telling Sammy to fuck off, you know, you still suck. And the image of him being lifted on the shoulders of the Jericho Appreciation Society, getting the pinfall victory, it felt like he was rewarded for doing something wrong, right? So as of when you were watching Dynamite, what do you think about the whole situation before the story came out?
I honestly didn't realize that was happening backstage.
Okay.
Yeah, so until, like, you know, you told me lah. Honestly, like, I don't know, there's just so much weird politics going on. I mean, I saw the Twitter thread and all that of Sammy cursing out El Idolo. You know, go back to WWE, you know, second time can't get over, that kind of thing. That, you know, your dad-in-law is the reason why you got a job, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, that's also hilarious, like, because Ric Flair is not with AEW after Dark Side of the Ring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Andrade, we know, it's a hyper-talented wrestler.
Yes, but it's also inarguable that his run in AEW, whether through booking
or whether it's...
He's been very lackluster, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I think there comes a time when we have to realize that AEW is not perfect 100%, but it is also a little bloated at times.
Sure.
You know, that they're like, you know, like, it's not that they're wasting the talent, it's just that sometimes their booking also just doesn't go down well.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's normal. I mean, all wrestling companies can't have 100% hit rates all the time, you know? Except NXT.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a rarity.
Black and gold NXT, let's clarify.
Yeah, black and gold.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, even black and gold NXT had some misses. Like, they missed out on Kushida, they missed out on Swerve.
100%. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, pulling people up too early, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And Swerve was NXT for 2 years and they did nothing with him.
Nothing.
Swerve Strickland.
Nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, even NXT, like, had a maybe 99% hit rate, but sometimes they missed too.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure. I want to see how this story develops as well, because right now nobody's fired, nobody's suspended, right?
Andrade seems to be suspended.
I mean, he was sent home,
but Sammy was not.
Hmm.
So that was the reason, like, the main event of Dynamite felt so weird. The fans were so against Sammy because they felt that Sammy was at fault. Sammy is the asshole. Part of it is his character. Part of it is his real life personality and all the backstage scuffles he's got into with Eddie Kingston and prior to that. Yeah. So everybody just assumed that Sammy Guevara was the villain in this story.
Yeah, because it's easy to hate on Sammy, you see.
Correct, yeah. Although, despite the fact that it was Andrade who called, you know, Sammy a pussy and exactly. Complaining about stuff on the podcast, and Sammy just responded to that. And then at this point, it was just a verbal Twitter spat. Like. It wasn't
physical yet, yeah.
Anything serious. So, the day after, and everybody is now blaming Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara is at fault. People love Andrade, etc. Sure. Right? The day after all this happened, Dave Meltzer comes out with what he claims is the real story, like, from all his backstage sources and everything. So, the day before Dynamite, Andrade and Sammy actually had a meeting with Tony Khan. Tony Khan didn't want a repeat of the Elite vs. CM Punk.
Sure.
So they had a meeting, and Tony Khan emphasized to them that there would be no backstage fights, no shoot shenanigans, don't touch each other. Whoever touches anyone else would lead to a suspension, would lead to serious repercussions, etc. Just don't do this. It came to the point where Tony Khan was so afraid of a repeat of the Elite vs. CM Punk that he hired extra security for Dynamite that night.
Oh, wow.
To make sure that they never touched each other.
Well, so that didn't work.
Part of it comes out that Sammy Guevara was just walking around backstage that day, and Andrade was actually waiting for him in the hallway.
Oh, damn.
And threw a sucker punch at him.
What?
Yeah, he sucker punched him twice. Sammy Guevara showed a bit of restraint and didn't, as per the instructions of Tony Khan, didn't fire back. So this is why Andrade was the one being sent home. Andrade was the one who sucker punched him twice. Sammy Guevara refused to retaliate, and then this was Andrade. And then it gets even more dramatic because there were additional reports from backstage at AEW, from Dave Meltzer, from Sean Rossap, and from others, that apparently Andrade had asked for his release. He asked for his AEW release about a month ago when Triple H came back in charge.
Oh, no.
He was one of the few, you know, the contract tempering things that that Tony Khan was talking about. Andrade was one of the people who wanted a release from AEW to go back to WWE. And he had been telling a bunch of people backstage that he was trying to get fired. And the speculation is now that Andrade, after the stern warning from Tony Khan that, you know, there'll be severe repercussions
Yo, Sammy! Yeah,
he thought this was his out. So he decided to just, like, punch Sammy Guevara and maybe he'll get fired. But the problem is that he's still under a 5-year contract with AEW. And for Tony Khan to fire him would be rewarding him for this behavior.
No, I know. This
so I don't know what Tony can do here. What do you think about this whole situation?
My God, people are making Tony Khan look stupid.
I think, like, a lot of it is his fault, but this one I don't think it's his fault.
No, definitely not his fault. I mean, he signed a guy to a 5-year contract thinking that, you know, I'm getting an elite wrestler here, man.
Yep. No pun intended.
Yeah. And
yeah,
just so you know, the guy changes of heart. You know, not happy with his booking, maybe. So you know, goes all out to destroy. No pun intended. To kind of like make it hard to work with, lah. Then therefore, I mean, this is a management issue as well, lah. You know, like, how do you manage a wrestler who doesn't want to be there? The one thing you can do is, you might want to book him better.
Sure. If you want to book him at all, do you want to reward him for this
exactly
behavior?
That's the thing, right? But then you kind of,
if you fire him, you're also rewarding him for this behavior. So what are you going to do? Are you going to do a Vince McMahon move of paying him to stay home?
You know, suspend him for you know, it all doesn't really. Yeah, there's no right answer to this, actually.
Absolutely.
Wow. I mean, kudos to Sammy though for his restraint.
Yeah, but also Sammy has sort of been ruined by this latest kerfuffle as well, because the fans have turned against him.
Yeah, I know, but then, I mean, exactly, and the fans don't really check dirt sheets and shit all the time.
Yeah, but also the fans also, like, this is not, like, heat. This is, like, go-away heat for Sammy.
Good, though. As a wrestler.
So, yeah. Say again?
Sammy's so good as a wrestler, though.
you know, he's really, really great as a wrestler. And perhaps they can turn this go-away heat into storyline.
I mean, I hope they do that, though. I really hope they do that. Because I feel that's more important than, you know, keeping Andrade. Because I think that Sammy Guevara has... I mean, this might be controversial, but I think he has more potential in AEW than Andrade would ever have.
I mean, by the fact that he's 10 years younger, la, I don't think that's controversial.
Oh, yeah, la. That's the reason why. That he got a longer shelf life. La.
Mm-mm. And also that he speaks English, which I know shouldn't be a thing, but it is a thing for American TV. It's like, an English speaker will always get over 100%. Easier than a Spanish speaker, 100%. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I myself was one of the people jumping on the bandwagon, oh, this is Sammy's fault again, especially after the Eddie Kingston thing. But after learning the whole story of Andrade trying to get fired, Andrade sucker-punching him, etc., this clearly seems to be Andrade's fault.
Yeah, this is Andrade's fault. This is 100% Andrade's fault then.
Yeah.
Man, that's a weird turn, man.
Yeah. It's a weird turn for AEW as well, because we kept pushing the narrative in the first couple of years of AEW that this seemed like the pro wrestling utopia, the boys backstage get along, etc. You know, and then
this,
you know, CM Punk came in.
Yeah, but this is when,
and,
like, politics and all start, you know.
The honeymoon period is officially over.
Because you're established already, you know, now you have clear lines of who's favored, who is the main guy, who's the, you know, all these things didn't exist 3-4 years ago. But right now, everything is more established. You know who's the one that's going to be pushed, who's the one who's being sent to catering, you know, that kind of thing.
Like Andrade. Yeah, so, I mean, it's very weird also. But at the same time, also not that weird. We are not young into our pro wrestling watching.
Yeah.
I mean, we heard the stories of the 80s. Exactly. We witnessed the stories in the 90s and 2000s of... literally every week, backstage at WWE, people were getting to fist fights. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was Shawn Michaels.
Quite drunk.
this drunk guy just putting himself over the backstage politicking. Everybody was punching Shawn Michaels every other week. Right?
Yeah, that's true. And he's so small. The best part is that he's actually a small guy compared to the wrestlers, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, compared to your Undertakers. We heard the stories of wrestlers caught, you know, people getting summarily punished by the boys backstage and things like that, you know. Or shitting in a bag like Randy Orton and stuff like that. Like, I don't think AEW has reached that level of toxicity.
I don't think they'll ever reach that kind of toxicity just because the wrestlers today are way different from the wrestlers of yesteryear.
I agree.
Can you imagine Cash Wheeler and Dex Harwood, for example, shitting in people's bags? I don't think so, right?
I don't think so.
But when you look at Randy Orton, you can, he's the kind of guy who shit in your bag.
Yes. So to a certain extent, a lot of the AEW fans are modern marks.
They are
Gen Z fans, shall we say. Sure. Gen Z or late millennial fans, right? So a lot of them are saying that, like, oh, AEW has become a toxic workplace, etc. And maybe they're right to an extent, you know. But I also don't think that in a pro wrestling context, this is far from toxic, in my opinion. Like 2 or 3 incidents doesn't make Attitude Era WWF.
This is nowhere close, man.
Like, if they had lived through the 90s and 2000s like we did, and even worse, for the guys who are older who had lived through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where, you know, people were murdered and stabbed, run over by cars and stuff like that, you know. Not kayfabe.
That was a way more ruthless era.
You know, Bruiser Brody, for example, you know, getting stabbed in the locker room, then dying and stuff like that. Like, this is nowhere near all that.
No.
We've seen worse. We've seen companies survive worse, and I think AEW will survive this.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to AEW Battle of the Belts 4, which, much like the previous 3 Battle of the Belts, felt like a house show. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing much to say about this this special, other than the Battle of the Belts format and concept seems to have been had a lot of potential, but it's been played out. Like, nobody really cares about the matches on Battle of the Belts, primarily because none of the titles have ever switched on Battle of the Belts.
Yeah.
So why would people tune in to watch? The only thing interesting about Battle of the Belts was that Pac wrestled 2 matches simultaneously, consecutively. Mm-hmm. He defended the AEW Trios title with Dive Triangle against Dark Order on the main event of Rampage. Yep. And immediately moved on to the first match of Battle of the Belts, which was the All Atlantic title match versus Trent Barretta. Great match, there's this little wrinkle of Pac now resorting to using the hammer to win his matches, a bit of a heel turn for Pac and stuff like that. That's the only notable thing. Because I felt like Jade Cargill versus Willow Nightingale was okay. The best part of the match though was Nyla Rose stealing the belt.
What was that?
I thought it was a funny match. The way that Nyla stole the belt and just like ran off was hilarious.
It was Nyla Rose, this huge monster of a woman running away with the belt.
Yeah, and then she was like, ha ha ha, ha. You know, I love that. Like, it really did feel like a heist.
No, and the best part is that, right, she's so big, right? You know, she's running with the belt. And then the two girls that are chasing her are so tiny in comparison.
Agreed. You know? Agreed.
So, yeah, that was funny. Yeah, Vicky Guerrero doing her stupid... Excuse me! Good distraction.
Good distraction. FTR versus Gates of Agony was a pretty good match, too. Gates of Agony, the first match on AEW television, they were ROH signees, of course. Bishop Kahn and Tua Leona really got to show out and maximize their minutes against...
And they look good.
Arguably the best tag team in the world right now, FTR. Yeah. This was pretty decent. So there was nothing overtly wrong with Battle of the Belts. It was just that it was no suspense in any of the matches.
Agreed.
What do you think about Battle of the Belts?
Gates of Agony, who's the manager?
Prince Nana.
Prince Nana. I like the character.
Yeah, Prince Nana is fun.
Yeah. Overall, I was fine with this. Belts didn't change, but then, you know, Jade Cargill would not lose to Willow Nightingale at this moment. That'd be weird.
I think you're going to bring her up to 50 and 0, right?
Yeah, I think so. That's the, I mean, or else you wasted all this time.
Sure.
Then for Peck, I mean, his shenanigans won him the match, but there were a few close finishes. I honestly thought, like, there were times when I was like, oh, wow, Trent might actually win, you know? But then once the hammer came out, I knew what was going to happen. The FTR Gates versus Gates of Agony, I think, was my favorite match of the night.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's about it. Nothing else to report.
All right. That was it for AEW Battle of the Belts. Let's move on to Impact Bound for Glory. This was, in my opinion, one of the better pay-per-views of the weekend, the best pay-per-view of the weekend. If I had to name Pro Wrestling Company of the Year, in my opinion, it's Impact, I think. I think they've delivered a banger after banger after banger of their premium live events of their pay-per-views. I don't watch Impact weekly, but I've watched every single one of their pay-per-views, and they've always been bangers. They've always been A-plus pay-per-views. If I had to name the two best wrestlers of the year, John Moxley will be in my top five for sure, just based on his accomplishments. Mm-hmm. But my number one would be Josh Alexander from Impact.
Oh, he's been awesome.
Their world champion. Sorry?
All the stuff that you asked me to watch from Impact has always been awesome.
Yeah, and my number two wrestler of the year would be Mike Bailey, also from Impact in the X Division. So Impact to me has just been killing it. Like, and if you have not seen Impact Bound for Glory, I would recommend that you go out of your way to watch four matches in particular. Okay. Mike Bailey versus Frankie Kazarian is one of the most phenomenal X Division title matches you will ever see.
Nice.
This was crazy. This was NXT TakeOver main event level good. Even to the point of too many false finishes. Maybe that's my one nitpick. But Mike Bailey versus Frankie Kazarian rocked it. This was a humper of a match, banger. I think it was better than Imperium versus Brawling Brutes, in my opinion, as an opener to a pay-per-view.
Okay.
It also had a surprising title change with Frankie Kazarian defeating Mike Bailey, who is a long-running X Division champion right now.
Yeah.
Killer match. Another match that I want you guys to watch is Matt Taven and Mike Bennett from Honor No More taking on the Motor City Machine Guns for the Impact World Tag Team titles. This was fantastic as well. Match of the night, though. Could be match of the year. Certainly the best women's match I've seen in 2022. Jordan Grace versus Masha Slamovic. It's the kind of pro wrestling wet dream I've always wanted. Like, this is an absurdly high level women's match. Absurdly high level. Impact has done a great job of building Masha Slamovic as a monster. None of her matches has lasted for longer than 30 seconds. But she is met with another monster in the Impact Knockouts champion, Jordan Grace, who carried... but essentially pushed her to a 30-minute match, and every single minute of this 30-minute match humped one of the most hard-hitting best matches of the year, in my opinion. So Jordan Grace versus Masha Slamovic, please watch it as well. Josh Alexander continues his run as probably the most legit world champion on any of the companies right now. I know Roman Reigns has had a longer run, but Roman Reigns hasn't had the series of bangers that Josh Alexander has had. Go out of your way to watch Josh Alexander versus Eddie Edwards.
Okay.
Another 5-star match from Josh Alexander, who has delivered nothing but 5-star matches in 2022.
All right.
Goodness. Impact Bound for Glory, go download it, go stream it on Fight TV, do whatever you want, go to watch wrestling or whatever. I don't care how you watch this pay-per-view.
Just watch it.
Watch Mike Bailey versus Frankie Kazarian. Watch Honor No More versus Motor City Machine Guns. Watch Jordan Grace versus Masha Slamovich. Okay. Watch Josh Alexander versus Eddie Edwards.
Wow, that's amazing. That's good stuff, man.
Yeah. The only other highlight of Impact Bound for Glory is Bobby Fish, who is now officially part of Impact as well after his release from AEW. Every time Bobby Fish is on camera, people are chanting CM Punk at him. Oh. So that's hilarious. You know, because he challenged CM Punk to a boxing match, right? So, okay, whatever. But yeah, that was Impact Bound for Glory. Highly recommend that you go watch this.
Nice.
Next up, I'll be talking about one match from New Japan Pro Wrestling Royal Quest 2, taking place in London, England, from the Crystal Palace National Sports Centre. Boy, the main event of night one, FTR versus Aussie Open from the United Empire. You know, I think you've seen Aussie Open on AEW Dynamite stuff also, right? Will Ospreay's stablemates, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, taking on Cash Wheeler and Dax Hardwood. Now, I've considered what I'm about to say quite carefully. Like, I didn't want to sound hyperbolic. I've had a couple of days to think about this. FTR versus Aussie Open from New Japan Pro Wrestling Royal Quest is as good as their Briscoes match, the first one.
Wow.
Is on that level.
Oh my god.
So, yeah.
I kind of want to watch it again now.
The Briscoes match?
Yeah. To compare
with this match. For sure. Yeah, but for sure. But once you watch this match, once you watch that match, which I also rewatched, and then I watch FTR versus Aussie Open from NJPW Royal Quest 2. Mm-hmm. They're on the same level.
Damn.
It's hard to say which is better or which is worse, but they're on the same level. And at this point of the year in 2022, it's hard to think of FTR having a bad match with anyone.
Agreed.
Yeah, so all of their matches range from good to match of the year. Mm-hmm. And this is one of their match of the years.
Okay.
Yeah, absolute barn burner. So go off your way to watch Cash, Wheeler, and Dax Hardwood versus Aussie Open. Okay. Crazy. The only downside of NJPW Royal Quest 2 is that it's not up for streaming yet. You either had to watch it live, but the replays are not up on NJPW World just yet. So you might have to wait a couple of weeks for this match to pop up. So yeah, so like keep it in your calendar, keep your eyes peeled for NJPW Royal Quest 2, particularly the main event of night one. Excellent. FTR versus Aussie Open.
Okay.
A couple of other short things to talk about. I'm going to talk about Stardom's 5-Star Grand Prix. Mm. If you don't know what the 5-Star Grand Prix is, it is Stardom's version of the G1 Climax Grand Prix. It ended with Julia versus Tam Nakano in a perfect match. It was an epic, it was intensely physical. Probably one of the most intensive physical matches you see in women's wrestling. Mm-hmm. It was fast-paced with devastating big moves from the opening bell. The fact that both these women already had matches earlier in the night, because, you know, it's a Grand Prix, made this showdown even more impressive. And it was one of those matches that can only be done by two of the most talented female performers who have great trust in one another. This match cannot go lower than 4.5 stars. Nice. You must appreciate the level of danger and physicality and technicality that these two women possess. You know, there are great women in WWE, there are great women in AEW, but Julia versus Tam Nakano and Jordan Grace versus Masha Slamovich are the two women's matches that will elevate, I think, your thinking of women's wrestling. Nice. And women's wrestling is already at a very high tier in 2022.
Agreed.
But the girls in Stardom and the girls in Impact are just pushing it to another level.
That's awesome.
This is great.
Awesome. Say again? That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, go check out Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix, the finals, Julia versus Tam Nakano. Mm-hmm. Finally, I want to talk about GCW Fight Club, where Jon Moxley defends the GCW World Championship in a death match against Nick Gage. And this is interesting because the stipulation is that if Jon Moxley wins and Nick Gage loses, Nick Gage will retire from pro wrestling. This is a title versus career match. So, just based on the stipulation, you knew that Nick Gage was going to win, because, you know, Nick Gage is not going to retire at this moment, at least. Yeah. So, with his career on the line, Nick Gage defeats Jon Moxley at GCW Fight Club 2022 to win the world title. However, he only won with some help, because AEW's W. Morrissey and Stokely Hathaway from The Firm the MJF's group showed up to attack Moxley, obviously in continuing the build between the MJF Moxley feud. Morrissey chokeslam John Moxley onto a barbed wire glass pane and then left.
That's not nice.
Then Gage hit him with two power drivers and a chokeslam to get the win. So a bit of shenanigans here, but also because of the fact that John Moxley is now the AEW, you know, world champion, etc., right? And he just recently signed a new 5-year contract with AEW. It means that that his GCW appearances will lessen in the future because he is primarily focused on AEW at the moment.
Makes sense, though.
So I get why he would drop the title to Nick Gage, who is a very reliable hand for GCW, like he's the GCW original and everything. Mm. So the finish makes sense. The shenanigans also make sense because it's not like Nick Gage is turning heel or whatever. Like this is MJF trying to beat down John Moxley and costing him a title that he loves dearly. So yeah, it advances his AEW storyline. It advances Nick Gage's storyline, so all good. If you want to watch GCW Fight Club, this is the one match I would recommend.
Sure, okay, I'll take a look, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, dude, definitely go watch Impact Bound for Glory, brother.
Yeah, soon after this podcast.
Absolutely, it's the one thing of all the things that I recommended here that you can, my use of this term, but that you can download right now. The rest you have to wait a couple of days. Okay. So yeah, go download Impact Bound for Glory, guys. However you want to download it, legally or maybe not legally, you have to watch this pay-per-view.
All right, we'll do.
All right, that wraps it up for this episode of the Hard Hits Wrestling Podcast. Any closing thoughts about pro wrestling in general? Anything you want to talk about before we cap it off here?
Yeah? It's a good time to be a wrestling fan.
So
much content everywhere.
Yep. Have you been watching Tales from the Territories on Vice?
Not yet. But that's something that I'll be doing this weekend.
Yeah, it's produced by Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. Uh-huh. It obviously tells you all the crazy tales from the territory era, like from the 60s and 70s. Ah. And much like I was talking about earlier, the crazy shit from the 60s and 70s is so on another level than the crazy shit you see AEW today that you have a hard time thinking that this stuff ever happened. But yeah, pro wrestling was the Wild West back in the day. And Tales from the Territories basically gathers all these old school people, you know, Pat Patterson, Jerry Jarrett, guys from the Jerry Lawler, guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Yeah. Then they just sit around the table and tell funny, hilarious, dangerous, scary stories from that era. It's quite fun. The format is similar to Dark Side of the Ring, so every story that they tell is reenacted via you know those silhouettes that you see from Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, okay.
So that's fun as well. So this is more of Tales from the Crypt type of storytelling. You know, somebody will tell a story and then it's reenacted. So it's a bit anthology in that vibe.
Okay.
But yeah, cool show to watch. We'll probably review that once the season ends in about 12 weeks. So keep an ear out or an eye out for our review of Tales from the Territory season 1. That's a good one as well for you to catch up. But hey, till next time, guys. We'll be back in about a month to talk about WWE Crown Jewel.
Nice.
NXT Halloween Havoc also will be covering. Plus, I'll be doing a solo review of AAA Triple Manias 30 in Mexico City.
Sounds good.
NXT Halloween Havoc looks to be fun too. Crown Jewel, Logan Paul versus Roman Reigns. I don't know if I'm into that, but okay, we'll see. This has been Hit Zero, though.
I'm Hardy.
We'll catch you guys next time. Soon. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.